Talk and Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, September 1st. September 1st already. I hope you're enjoying this Labor Day holiday weekend, the last blast before back to school and end of summer. And actually, this is the last Talking Golf show of this season. Ah, it went by too fast. Hope you all have enjoyed this season of Talking Golf. Let me hear from you. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by iBeCool Luxury Athleisure Apparel for men and women, featuring the exclusive ice-filled cooling technology, along with UPF 50+ sun protection. Visit ibkol.com to learn more. And before we get into golf, so many upsets at the U.S. Open tennis. Unbelievable. I really want a Novak Djokovic to win a record 25th major title. He's won four U.S. Opens, but he really did not look his best all week. And the Aussie who beat him, this guy, Alexei Popyrin, had nothing to lose. It was his first match ever on the Ash Stadium court. He's 25 years old, and apparently it was the third time they had played, and third time's a charm. Popyrin, he won in four sets. And Djokovic said afterwards, you know, just mentally, it was a huge struggle for him to play these matches this year. He wasn't even close to his best, he said. He could not find his game. And he said, the game is falling apart, and I guess you have to accept that tournaments like this happen. Well, Djokovic, he's 37 years old, and perhaps realizing that he just can't have his best stuff every single time he gets out there. Well, nobody really does. But having watched him through the years, even when he does not have his best stuff, he finds a way to win, especially in the early rounds of the Grand Slams. But, you know, he's 37, as I said. I mean, you can't count him out. He'll be more than ready, I think, for the Grand Slam season next year. But, you know, the season's long, and with the Olympics, all that hard court play. I mean, same thing happened to young Carlos Alcaraz. He got bounced out in straight sets. Unbelievable. And, you know, Alcaraz won the French this year, won Wimbledon. He competed in the Olympics, actually lost to Novak Djokovic in the finals. So I just think the schedule this year took its toll on both these guys. And so they're out. And in the women's, of course, Naomi Osaka, two-time U.S. Open champion, losing in the second round. But, you know, she's still regaining her form after becoming a mom in 2022. So anyway, tennis continues. Week number two, U.S. Open. And the finale of the PGA Tour season, the Tour Championship, at the newly refurbished East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta, Georgia. And so, you know, you have the top 30 golfers in the FedEx Cup standings advancing to this tournament after last Sunday's BMW Championship. And, you know, this tournament features that staggered start, which happens in round one. So because Scottie Scheffler leads the FedEx Cup points, he started at the top of the leaderboard at 10 under. And then you had number two, Xander Schauffele, starting at 8 under. Hideki Matsuyama started at 7 under. Keegan Bradley started at 6 under. Ludvig Åberg started at 5 under. Then you had players 6 through 10. Rory, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, Sam Burns, Patrick Cantlay, they started at 4 under, and then so on and so forth. And, you know, the winner this afternoon will take home $25 million. And, of course, Scottie Scheffler started the Tour Championship at 10 under, as I said, with a two-shot lead over Xander. But before you say, how can this guy lose it with a lead like that to start the tournament? This is actually the third straight time that Scottie Scheffler has started with the lead, and yet he has not won the FedEx Cup. Back in 2022, Scottie led by six shots heading into the final round, and Rory McIlroy overtook him. that year to win his third FedEx Cup title. So, you know, since this strokes format was introduced back in 2019, only two players went on to win the FedEx Cup when starting the Tour Championship as the FedEx Cup leader. That was Dustin Johnson in 2020 and Patrick Cantlay in 2021. And when Rory won it in 2022, he started 4 under, as I mentioned, 6 shots back. And when he won it, Rory, in 2019, he started at 5 under, 5 strokes behind. And then Victor Hovland last year started 2 shots back before winning it all. So you just never know. But this time, Scotty Scheffler, I mean, he looks pretty flawless. He shook off a bogey start yesterday, birdied holes 7, 8, 14, 16, 17, and 18, carded a 5 under 66. And, of course, it's a huge statement heading into this afternoon. He's 26 under, is a 5-shot lead. And this is the finale, folks. So if he wins today, he'll be the FedEx Cup champion on top of everything else he's won in just an extraordinary season. Now, Colin Morikawa, he had 5 birdies and a bogey yesterday. He pressed Scotty most of the day, but he's still at 21 under, 5 back. So he'll have to come up with something pretty special to stop Scotty today. And then you have Sahith Theegala shooting at 66. He started with a birdie on 2, doubled 3. And then on the back, he birdied 11, birdied 12, doubled 13. Then he birdied 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. All that, and then he calls a penalty on himself, thinking he may have touched the sand in a bunker on the 4th hole. So Theegala calls a rules official over. And, you know, just what went down basically is he was assessed a 2-stroke penalty for breaking rule 12.2B. But, I mean, you have to be impressed with, you know, the replay doesn't show anything. You can't tell if the club touched the sand in the bunker or not. But because he thought he may have and called it on himself, he was assessed that 2-stroke penalty. Only in golf does a player call a penalty on himself or herself. It is really a game of honor. Just another reason why golf is just an incredible game. But you're talking about playing for a ton of prize money, and a 2-shot penalty is huge. And what an honorable guy. Very impressive. Really. Theegala. All right, Xander Schauffele, he shot an even par 71. He's 10 shots back. Wyndham Clark, 11 shots back. Rory McIlroy, he's tied for 10th with Ludvig Åberg at 11 under. So as I mentioned, the payday is huge. There is a record amount of prize money for this, $100 million, up $25 million from last year. I mean, where does the money come from? As I mentioned, the winner will get $25 million. The second place will get $12.5 million. The top 5 finishers will get at least $5 million. And those inside the top 12 will earn 7 figures. So everyone in the field will make at least $500,000. And Scotty already has surpassed $25 million in earnings this season with his Masters win, the Players' Championship win, and winning 4 signature events. So the money in the game has just become incredible. Yeah, these guys are good, but they also have it really good. I do not think we'll see a meltdown today. I think Scotty should be able to basically put a bow on a spectacular season, wrap it up. And what has impressed me most about him this season is he's really been able to handle all the added pressure, expectation, and attention. He's a quiet kind of guy. He does not really like the attention, but it comes with the territory when you've dominated like that. And you know, he's handled it pretty well. And we're also seeing him, I think, get more irritated and angry with himself when things don't go perfect for him. And I guess he uses that to fuel and focus and play better. So he's been really interesting to watch. But again, as they say, as the great Yogi Berra once said, it ain't over till it's over, right? So we'll see if he can close it out with that 5-shot lead. Adam Shupak of Golf Week. He's at Eastlake for the Tour Championship, and we will check in with him after the 8:40 update. All right, in other news, Jordan Spieth had wrist surgery last week. He has said on his social media it all went well, and he said he looks forward to returning to golf healthy and prepared next season. And we knew he was struggling most of the season with a bad wrist. So good to hear he got this done, and hopefully he can come back and kind of rekindle that Jordan Spieth magic of old. We love Jordan Spieth. Some things to look forward to in the next coming weeks. The Presidents' Cup, only a few weeks away, September 24 to the 29th at Royal Montreal Golf Club. You have the U.S. team captain, Jim Furyk, the international team captain, Mike Weir, and they will announce their six captains' picks this Tuesday. So still a lot of stuff in golf to watch. Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, Patrick Cantlay, Sahith Theegala, they are all automatically qualified. And then the captain's picks could be, Sam Burns, Tony Finau. Don't know about Max Homa or Brian Harman this time around, but I will say Russell Henley might have a good chance. Billy Horschel has been in good form. Justin Thomas, big question mark. Akshay Pattaya, Cameron Young, Nick Dunlop, they could receive some consideration. And Keegan Bradley, he could also be playing. He's supposed to be an assistant captain, but he could play. He's playing so well. And then the international team, Hideki Matsuyama, Sungji Im, Adam Scott, Tom Kim, Jason Day, Byung Hun Ahn, and then their picks could be Corey Connors, Cam Davis. Of course, you have the Canadians. Taylor Pendrith, Nick Taylor, Adam Hadwin, Mackenzie Hughes. They'd all love to play in their own country. So we'll know those picks on Tuesday. The LPGA is in Boston, the FM Championship, and Jin Young Ko with rounds of 71, 67, and 67. She is at 11 under, and that puts her two shots ahead of Lauren Coughlin and three shots ahead of Carlotta Giganda, Allison Corpus, and Gino Thaddeus. They're all at 8 under, three shots back. So Ko from Korea, she's looking to win her 16th LPGA Tour title. The Curtis Cup is going on right now. That's the team competition for top amateur female players between the U.S. against Great Britain and Ireland. And after day two yesterday, Great Britain and Ireland took a two-point lead, capitalizing on a strong afternoon. They went 2-0-1 in their four-balls format, so they lead 7-5 heading into today's singles matches. Solheim Cup, as you know, coming up as well. Top female players from the U.S. versus the top female players from Europe. That takes place in Virginia, September 13 to the 15. Robert Trent Jones Golf Club. And the last year's contest in Spain ended in a tie with Europe retaining the cup. And Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup are in separate years. But because of the pandemic, it kind of messed up the years. So they are holding the Solheim Cup again this year after last year so that they can return the Solheim Cup to even-numbered years. And you know the U.S. team. Nelly Korda, Lilia Vu, Lauren Coughlin, Allison Corpus, Megan Kahn, Andrea Lee, Rose Zhang, Allison Lee, and then the three captains' picks. Lexi Thompson, boy, she's played on six previous Solheim Cup teams. So hopefully she'll have a great Solheim Cup. Another one, her seventh. Jennifer Kupcho, she's the captain's pick. She's already played on two Solheim Cups. And Sarah Schmitzel, she'll be a rookie this year. So lots going on in golf. Kind of in the off season, right? Well, this morning, in a few minutes, I am going to reconnect with the legendary Renee Powell. Now, if you don't know Renee, you should. She is an international golf ambassador. She is a champion for veterans. She is a social change patriot. And she's a PGA and LPGA professional. She runs Clearview Golf Club in Canton, Ohio, which is a course that her father, William Powell, built, designed, owned, and operated. And Renee has such a compelling history and inspirational journey of overcoming challenges, and she continues to make positive change in the world. She's an honorary member of the RNA. And when I talked about the AIG Women's Open last Sunday, which was at St. Andrews, I talked about Renee Powell and how St. Andrews named her an honorary member, and the university there even has a dorm named after her. She is one of 12 golf legends whom I write about in my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. She's in 12 Halls of Fame. I could go on and on about Renee Powell, but we are going to visit with her in a few minutes. So stay where you are. We'll be back. Let me tell you about IBCOOL, luxury athleisure wear for both men and women, offering the highest performance-driven apparel to look and feel your best on and off the course. IBCOOL offers multifunctional, intelligent, moisture-sensor fabrics featuring the exclusive ice-fill technology that cools your skin up to 5 degrees so you can stay cool, comfortable, and odor-free on hot and humid days. IBCOOL apparel also features UPF 50+ sun protection. It's colorful, stylish, soft, with the latest technology to protect your skin. Look and feel your best. Learn more at IBKOL.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Labor Day holiday weekend. Hope you're having a good one so far. And joining me now is the great Renee Powell, PGA, LPGA professional, member of 12 Halls of Fame, running the Clearview Golf Club and Powell Educational Center, one of 12 legends, I'm very proud to say, in my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Hey, welcome to Talking Golf, Renee.
Hey, Ann, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. It was so great running into you at the Masters. You were with the president of St. Andrews University, right, in Scotland, and seeing you both on the 12th hole, which is one of the most iconic holes in all of golf. And how appropriate, by the way, two iconic women and you, Renee, just a dynamic force in our sport and beyond. It was just so great to run into you.
Oh, thanks, Ann. You know what? We've run into each other at Augusta just sort of randomly, which is
right,
great.
Right, every year. And, of course,
every
at the
year.
PGA show. And I mentioned right. You last Sunday on this show when I was talking about the AIG Women's Open at St. Andrews. Did you get a chance to get over there?
I did not go, but I watched it. And, you know, the weather was, as I always, anytime I've gone to St. Andrews, no matter what month it is, it was like perfect St. Andrews weather.
Exactly. Well, you played in that kind of weather because you used to live in the UK, and I want to talk about that in a second. But I just love the fact that you are an honorary member of the RNA and that St. Andrews University honored you with a doctorate degree and named a dormitory after you. I mean, how great is that?
I know. It's just amazing. You know, it's something that you would never, ever dream of, you know, especially as a young girl. And then, you know, knowing about St. Andrews for years in Scotland from my dad when he was over there in the military during the war. But all of a sudden, here I am. I came from a little town that I grew up with. We had two traffic lights in East Canton. And now here I am at the iconic area of golf. And I'm just, you know, it's, I love it. I love it over there. St. Andrews has been so wonderful to me. I mean, having a connection with the university, having a connection with the RNA, it's just fabulous.
And you're almost more recognizable in St. Andrews, Scotland, than in Canton, Ohio, right?
You're right, I am.
Well, I know you moved to the UK in 1970, becoming the first woman head pro at a private golf course in the UK. And when I asked you in your chapter in the book if the UK was more inclusive, you said you never had problems there. Tell me about that.
Well, I didn't. And, you know, I mean, even, you know, I think back when I was on the tour, especially in the earlier years on the LPGA tour, I had issues and problems going to restaurants.
when we're traveling and in hotels and threat letters on my life. So living in the UK, I mean, I never had anything negative happen to me. And so it was just such a pleasant experience for me. And, you know, and I loved it. And, you know, it's just, you never know what things are like in other places or how you would be treated. And I was treated very, very nicely when I lived there and when I traveled there.
Isn't that great? And your career really thrived there, not only as a player and an instructor, but you designed your own clothing line, right, for Harrods in London.
I did. Well, it was for a major fashion house there, and the first people to buy was Harrods Department Store. And, of course, after Harrods bought, everybody else did. They followed suit.
I just think there's so many like levels to your life and your career, and you overcame so many challenges in your life and as a second black female to play on the LPGA Tour. And we get into that detail in the chapter in Life on the Green. And I love the title of your chapter, Don't Let Anyone Else Define You and Don't Ever Give Up, because it really is you. And it's so inspirational to so many people. And growing up in Canton, Ohio, you faced racism as a child going to school. You faced racism as an athlete. You faced racism as a golfer on the LPGA Tour. What inside you, Renee, helped you get through all these tough times?
Well, you know, I think it was just simply because of my parents. Knowing what they had gone through, I didn't know everything they had gone through, but I can imagine some of the things. But my parents always taught me that they loved me, that God loved me, and that everybody has challenges in life. And you can't, and, you know, my dad was the one that said to me, never to allow anybody to define you as an individual. And that's something that's always stuck with me. But I think they gave me a really strong backbone early in life. And so even, you know, as I ran into things as I got older, even college days, playing golf or trying to play in amateur tournaments, you know, before I joined the LPGA Tour. I mean, I ran into a lot of issues, and I think it was just from the very backbone of that my parents gave me early on, from the third grade on, when I ran into issues. I think that's what sort of sustained me throughout my entire life.
Sure, sure. I know your parents were great role models, and your father, William Powell, the only black man to have designed, built, owned, and operated his own golf course, Clearview Golf Club in Canton, Ohio. And now there is the Powell Education Center, right? Tell us about it.
Oh, my gosh. It's only taken 75 years to get this building in. I mean, you know, anytime we had an event, like a major event, we've had LPGA pro-ams here, over 30. We've had celebrity tournaments. This year was the 39th annual, and we always had to put up a tent. We finally were able to raise enough funds due to organizations like the LPGA and others who the Powell Educational Center is a building that we have a small museum area in honor of our parents. We have so much memorabilia put up in here, and we have a big room where we can host and have outings and awards functions. And all through the entire building, there are all sorts of memorabilia on the walls. And one of the things that we're going to have a grand opening next year for it, but one of the things that we're also looking forward to doing is having a place so people can come here and do research. And, you know, learning more about golf, learning more about the history of African Americans in golf, learning more about Clearview and what one man did and what one individual can achieve in society.
It's incredible. I know was it 2001, Clearview was named to the National Register of Historic Places,
yes.
Which is a very tough thing to get.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and in that same year, we formed the Clearview Legacy Foundation for Education, Preservation, and Turf Grass Research, which is a 501c3. So we created a foundation here the same year that everything was placed on the National Register of Historic Places.
So the interesting thing is we have a building. We were trying to do two things. We also don't have an automatic irrigation system here. And that's the next thing that we're working on, to raise funds to put in an automatic irrigation system, because at night there's hoses sort of all around. We've got to drag hoses, put them on the greens, to water the greens, just to keep it alive. And the thing is that it's been so hot this summer. And so it takes 12 hours to water these greens. And so it's moving hoses around from place to place on the greens to water them.
Wow. So I know, you know, your father wanted this golf course to represent the fact that it's open to all, regardless of race, color, ethnic origin, and the work you all do there and continue to do there is just incredible. And I know you have a big event coming up September 21 and 22 with two groundbreaking women's golf clubs. Tell me about that, Renee.
Yes. So there is the Wake Robin Ladies Golf Club, Black Ladies Golf Club out of Washington, D.C., and the Chicago Women's Golf Club out of Chicago, Illinois. And those two Black Ladies Golf Clubs that were both formed in 1937. So this year they're celebrating 87 years, almost 90 years. These two ladies black clubs were formed, and both were talking about coming here this year. And I'm like, really? Okay, well, listen, neither one of them really have met each other before, so I put them together. We're having this event. They're both coming. Clearview sits right in the middle of both of them. Basically, we're about 6 hours away from D.C., 6 hours away from Chicago. So we have these two Black ladies golf clubs, the oldest ones in the country, coming here to Clearview, the historic golf club. And it's awesome. And it's really exciting because they've never met. We're going to have a fun time. We're going to have a little bit of competition, not stiff competition, but fun competition. And just talking to the two and putting the two groups together has been a lot of fun. And I think that the major thing is really getting people aware that golf, Black women in golf, have been playing for a long, long time. I mean, 87 years. You're talking about moving close to 100 years.
Right. And, I mean, I didn't even know about these clubs. And the education is so important in what you're doing, bringing, I went on the website, and Wake Robin Golf Club, founded in 1937, is the oldest African-American women's golf club in the U.S., and then Chicago Women's Golf Club, the oldest in the Midwest. And to bring these two clubs together, really clubs that paved the way for Black women in golf, and to educate people about this, because I've been in golf for years, and I didn't know about, and I love, you go on their website, and these women, there's a bus tour, and it just, I can imagine the enthusiasm there is for this trip. And then after, I guess, your conference or your meeting, they also have the opportunity to go to the NFL Hall of Fame, right?
Yes.
In Canton. So it sounds like a great trip. Where do I sign up?
I know. And they are all so exciting. They've been calling me, and they've been putting all sorts of things together. I know the Chicago women, they have a couple of women that are in their 90s that are coming here, and they're very excited about coming here. So it's just going to be a tremendous opportunity to create an awareness about what people have been doing, and these two golf clubs have been doing for nearly 90 years. One of the things with the Chicago women, they've always had a program for junior golfers too. And the junior golfers, and they have a little club within that club called the Bobolinks. And I know that when I was coming up as a junior, I played against some of those young girls that were members of the Bobolinks in the Chicago Women's. I also spoke at the 50th anniversary of Wake Robin, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was 87 years. This is amazing.
Wow. I mean, you're involved with so much. What else is the Education Center doing? What do you have coming up? You said there's going to be a grand opening next year.
Right. Right. And we're continuing to put more memorabilia in here. You know, we do a lot of programs for veterans, of course. And we do have we'll have our PGA Hope women's veterans group here on September the 25th. I think we're doing a program for all of our veteran women in our Northern Ohio section. So we have a lot of different things going on. Which is always exciting. It's always an exhausting year, but it will be, you know, we're coming to the fall, which will be our, you know, sort of the end of our season.
Right. But you work there full time. I mean, there's always programs and things to do. So, you know,
right.
I don't know how you get it all done.
I continue to do it, though.
Right.
So we just get it done.
You get it done. Exactly. And I know you and your father are the only father and daughter in the PGA of America Hall of Fame.
We are.
I know. What an accomplishment.
Isn't that amazing?
Really?
My dad went in posthumously, of course, in 2013. And I went in 2017. And so, yeah, so I'm really proud of the fact that that we're both there. Yeah. So
what out
thing.
There have you yet to do, Renee? Because, you know, there's so much work still to be done, right? And
yeah.
What's your mission? What do you have to do? I know you want to write a book, right? I know that's a project.
That's right. And I'm in the middle of writing that book. And I'm trying to, you know, I need to try to find a publisher, find a good agent, and then get this book accomplished. The one thing I want to finish it while I can still remember.
Exactly. Get all those stories out there, because I'm sure you have so many of them that need to be told, right?
Right.
I love it. Well,
yeah.
You know, if you want to be inspired, I mean, Renee's story is really all about that. And I was just honored that you are part of Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And, you know, at the Augusta National, I saw you and I saw Annika and I saw Bernard Langer, and I saw Ben Crenshaw and Jack.
Wow.
And, you know, so many of these Hall of Famers who are part of this book. And I can't thank you all enough for giving me your time and telling me your stories and really opening up about the hardships that you experienced, you know, starting as a young girl, you know, growing up in Ohio. And you look, your message is just overcoming all that adversity and don't let anyone else define you and don't ever give up. And those messages are just universal for everyone, you know. And I can't thank you enough for really telling your story and being so open and honest about it.
Well, Ann, you were a great interviewer. So it was easy to talk to you. I didn't, you know, when I started reading the book, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know he said this much.
Well, I'm sure you still have many more stories for your book, but hey, continued success, all the best with your upcoming program with Wake Robin Golf Club and Chicago's Women's Golf Club at Clearview Golf Club. And, you know, just continue to celebrate diversity and the game of golf. You're just a legend, Renee, and I can't thank you enough for all you do on the course and off the course, really.
Oh, thank you, Anne. And, you know, your book is awesome. I've read it. It's wow, I learned so much about so many people. And thank you for allowing me to be part of that book.
Renee Powell, we'll visit again soon, I hope. Continued success.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. And now coming up, we are going to go to East Lake Golf Club for the Tour Championship and connect with Adam Shupak of Golf Week. But first, let me tell you that Ivy Cool Luxury Athleisure Wear for both men and women offers the highest performance-driven apparel to look and feel your best on and off the course. Ivy Cool offers multifunctional, intelligent moisture sensor fabrics featuring the exclusive ice fill technology that cools your skin up to 5 degrees so you can stay cool, comfortable, and odor-free on hot and humid days. Ivy Cool apparel also features UPF 50+ sun protection. It's colorful, it's stylish, it's soft with the latest technology to protect your skin. Look and feel your best. Learn more at ibkul.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this last show of the season. Oh my gosh, it went so fast. And it's also the finale of the PGA Tour season, with the Tour Championship taking place at East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta, Georgia. And joining us from there now is Adam Shupak, senior writer for Golf Week. Hey, Adam, welcome back to Talking Golf.
Yeah, can't believe it is the end of the season, but yeah, we're down to the final round of the Tour Championship today and going to crown the FedEx Cup champion in a few hours.
And what do you think? Can Scottie Scheffler put a bow on this baby? What a season he's had.
Yeah, I mean, if you spot the number one player in the world who's already won six times and a gold medal, five strokes going into the final day, I think it's a pretty good chance he's going to hang on. But, you know, 2 years ago, he led by six going into the final round, and Rory went and shot 64 and beat him. So, you know, it's, as Yogi would say, it's never over till it's over. But I would say Scotty is just had an incredible season, and this would be quite the way to cap it off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, can you imagine if he would not win with a five-shot lead? But as you mentioned, and I mentioned it earlier, 2022, he had a six-shot lead. But he's a much better putter than he was in 2022, right? This season, his putting has been extraordinary. In fact, I heard Brandel Chambly talking about his putting. He said, they are essentially the same player at tee to green. I never thought I'd be able to say that. Tiger Woods was a much better putter. What we are seeing this week is Tiger Woods type putting. So interesting comparison there. Do you agree with that?
I think, you know, it's close to Tiger-like putting this week. He ranks second in the field in strokes game putting, and when Scotty's putting this well, it's not a fair fight. The guy is number one in 26 different statistical categories this season on the PGA Tour. Putting is not one of them. So when he puts like this, and makes, you know, 19 footer on 14 for birdie, 23 footer at 16. He's looking really strong. Will he putt as well today? I mean, he's struggling on these greens. The course went through this big restoration. Whatever they changed to them, it seems to be a positive for him, because he's had his three best putting days ever at East Lake the last 3 days. I think, you know, if he's just solid on Sunday, as long as he's par or better, I think he wins this. Unless, you know, Colin Morikawa did shoot 63 in the third round. He shot 61 last year at East Lake. He's driving the ball great, leading the field in driving accuracy. So if you're putting the ball in the right spot in the fairway, you have chance to kind of play aggressive and make a lot of birdies at this course. I don't think it's over, but the fat lady's warming up.
And Morikawa, I mean, you got to give him credit. He has been trying. I mean, he came up with, a lot of great rounds this week, but he's going to have to play something really special today. And Scheffler will have to falter for anything else to happen. But let's look at players who won seven or more times in a single season. Tiger won seven times in 2007. He won eight times in 2006. Vijay Singh actually won nine times in 2004. Yeah. And then Tiger winning nine times in 2000 and eight times in 99. So from what you've seen, Adam, this year with Scotty, can you make any comparisons to any of these seasons that I just spoke about?
I think so. And this has been as dominant as we've really seen since Tiger. I mean, Vijay had the one season where he, you know, kind of eclipsed him and got to world number one for a stretch in 04, as you mentioned. But, you know, what Scotty's done this year, he won the Masters, he won the Players, which, you know, we call the fifth major, and then was just dominant in the signature events, winning mostly, you know, most of his other wins were in those events on some of the toughest courses against the strongest field. It's really, and then the gold medal coming back on the last day to do that. I always say the majors is what matters, and that's who I'm going to vote for player of the year. And Xander won two of those, but the way Scotty's played throughout, I actually think, you know, if it's only six wins, if say Colin Morikawa were to win today, to me, Scotty Scheffler, you know, pound for pound was the best golfer this season. He's who I'll I would be voting for player of the year. And I think he's going to win it for the third straight time, which is, you know, that just doesn't happen. That is Tiger-esque, and that's the type of year he's had.
Absolutely. I would be all over that, too. There's no doubt in my mind that Scotty would be player of the year. But yet, Adam, ratings for golf have been down this year. And you have to wonder why. Do you think, I mean, Scotty, as good of a golfer as he is, he's really not a personality that moves the needle, right? So you look at some of these incredible performances this year, not only from Scotty, but, you know, Xander and a number of other players. Are these personalities enough to get golf ratings up? We're seeing a decline in golf ratings, but I know there's other reasons, too. I mean, the media landscape has changed for everything, right? You know, people are consuming sports and news in different ways on a variety of platforms, whether it's TV, cable, digital, YouTube, whatever. So that's affecting ratings in everything. But what do you think about why golf ratings may be down?
Well, the golf ratings, I think it probably has to do with this whole PGA Tour Live rift, and people are just tired of waiting to find out what's going to happen. And kind of the greed in golf has turned a lot of people off, especially I think the casual sports fan is like, I don't care about these guys right now. I'm a little over this. And I think that has been a factor. I think people are turning off golf and saying, you know, I like it. I want to tune in when the best players are playing together. And so maybe at majors, they turn it back on. I just think the fact that there was supposed to be a deal in December, and now we're in August, we're nowhere, don't seem to be very much closer. We're not getting any details on the progress other than to say they're still talking and they want to do a deal. It's just, I think that has turned people off to the sport. And, you know, I don't think it's Scotty's fault. I think, you know, he's had some incredible performances that people enjoy. You know, Tiger didn't say a lot to the media. Scotty lacked some of the fist pumps and stuff. But, you know, I think he also was in jail right before he went out for a round. I think people were amazed by that. And now everybody in the world knows who he is. If you didn't know who Scotty Scheffler was before the PGA Championship, you do now. So I don't think it's Scotty's fault that the ratings are down. I think it's a bigger issue and something that hopefully in the next 12 months gets addressed and we can move forward as one sport again.
But that unification issue, if it does happen, who knows if it's going to happen or not, and we can talk about that in a second. But do you really think, you know, I know Bryson DeChambeau, he moves the needle. But beyond that, I mean, Brooks, people want to see Brooks. Yes, we want to see these guys play each other, which, you know, the top players from LIV who have qualified for the majors, that's when we see them. But do you think that will really make a big difference? It will be interesting to see. First of all, the commissioner, you know, did not say much in his address earlier this week at the Tour Championships, right? He never really talks about the negotiations between the PGA Tour and the Saudi PIF. Do you, Adam, think a deal will get done?
I think it will, but I think it's going to be a while still. I think the DOJ is looming as to how can these two organizations unite, and the question of is it a monopoly, I think is slowing things down. But I think that for golf to move forward, I just think they need to come together, figure something out. I still feel like, you know, the time from the fall until when the season, PGA Tour season really begins in January, might make the most sense for where LIV could fit in, and they could work together and allow players to, you know, they're not a lot of PGA Tour stars that are going to be teeing it up in the fall anyway. This is their off season. If they really want to go chase even more money than they've already made, I feel like there's an opportunity for these guys to go play overseas in some of these bigger money LIV events. If that's what's gonna happen, if LIV's gonna continue, and it seems like you know, after 3 years, as they're kind of winding down this latest season, while people aren't that interested in it and they're tuning in, unless the Saudi PIF decides to pull the plug on all the funding, as long as they're still committed to pouring the money in, the players, you know, have agreed to show up and they're, you know, have found some niche areas, that, you know, when they go to Australia, they draw big crowds and the people love it. So, you know, it's a big world, and there's some places with pent-up demand to see some of the great players that they have playing there, like John Rahm. You take John Rahm to Spain and some of these other places, I think that they can draw some crowds. And, you know, if you brought some of the top PGA Tour players and got them involved during the fall and maybe not as much during the regular season, maybe they can work together. That's what I envision happening down the road.
Oh, I think LIV will continue to exist on its own. And then to me, this unification would be just figuring out a way to fold back some of the stars from LIV into the PGA Tour tournaments if they want to come back and play some of the PGA tournaments. I would think John Rahm would like that, and maybe Brooks, but who knows if they, and Bryson, but, you know, do they really want to come back and play PGA Tour events?
I would think they do. I would think some of them will. It'll be interesting, you know, how do they bring them back? I mean, they're already talking about fewer PGA Tour cards in the future. So when there's even fewer spots, how do you fit these guys in when guys are going to be, you know, battling? When you're talking about shorter fields, if it's, you know, they've already got the signature events with 70. There's talk of maybe going up to 100, and then shortening the 144 and 156 fields to 120. And it's just, there's a lot of, it is a complicated thing to do, but I still wish they just get in a room and try to figure something out and get some answers and make a decision and come to an agreement before too long. And I asked Jay, is there a deadline? And he said, there isn't really a deadline. We just want to make the best decision. So I think this thing drags out for a lot longer.
The question to me is, do these players on the players policy board really want to bring these guys back? That to me is what is the big issue.
I think there's some that want to make them feel some pain. You know, they feel like they got a lot of money, and I think what eventually happens is those guys will never be allowed to have any of this ownership equity that the players now have. And so that will be the thing that they won't, that will be the way they'll bring them back in, is like they'll be back, but they'll be more like helping grow their value.
Adam Shupak of Golf Week, always a pleasure. Enjoy the finale.
Thanks so much, Ann.
Championship today. Enjoy. I hope it's cooling down in Atlanta too. My thanks to Adam Shupak, to Renee Powell, to Rami Levy in the studio. Mark Malusis is up next. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori was brought to you by Ivy Cole Luxury Athleisure Apparel for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive icicle cooling technology along with UPF 50 Plus sun protection. Visit IBKOL.com to learn more. And hey, this wraps up the 2024 Talking Golf season. I hope to be back next April, the Sunday before the Masters, for another season of Talking Golf. Until then, would love to hear from you. Enjoy football season. Be safe. Be kind. And I look forward to talking to you next April, right on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.